Hello, fellow nerds, and welcome to another episode of the Modern Health Nerd Podcast, where every week we bring you fascinating conversations with the movers, shakers, and innovators in food, health, agriculture, and everywhere in between. I'm your host, Teresa Sam Houghton, Chief Nerd at the Modern Health Nerd. This week, I'm talking with David Benzikin. David is the managing director of Mission Plant, which is a holding company that's advancing the plant-based food industry by making strategic investments and providing consulting services. He's also the co-founder of Moonshot Collaborative, something that I'm particularly excited about, and you'll find out why in this episode. He has a wide and varied background, including some time in the plant-based seafood industry, and just so many things supporting the growth and furtherance of the plant-based movement. David and I had a really great conversation. We touch on everything from the problems within our food system, the problems we create as we try to solve those problems within the food system, what's going on right now in the plant-based space, and some pretty cool existing and up-and-coming plant-based products. If you enjoy our conversation, please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform and give us a review. It helps us to get seen by other people and to bring the plant-based nerdity to a wider audience. And now, my conversation with David Benzikin. Well, welcome to the podcast, David. I'm really glad you took some time to join me today. Thanks for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So could you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're up to right now? There's so much. I mean, I went over a little bit of it in the intro, but you have done so much and you're involved in so much right now. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'm really, really passionate about this space, obviously. So I've been plant-based as an eater and consumer for over 20 years and have spent the last 11 years in the business world helping to make the industry around plant-based foods more successful through investments, consulting, and founding some companies even myself. In the most recent iteration, I have a company called Mission Plant LLC, which I describe as my playground. It's where I get to do kind of whatever I want. And so I'm doing a little investing in some really early stage companies with exciting new products. And I'm helping a few new companies come to market. And I also founded a company called Moonshot Collaborative, which does consumer research to help plant-based food companies with perfecting their product ideas, pricing, branding, whatever it may be, based on getting insights from consumers directly.
Which I will be asking you more about later, because I've been on my soapbox in my newsletter and on my LinkedIn in the recent past about how consumer messaging and customer education is super lacking in the plant-based space. So we'll definitely be coming back to Moonshot because that excites me. But speaking of some of the companies that you've been involved with or are involved in, are there a few that you'd like to talk about or that you can talk about to kind of give the listeners an idea of the diversity of what you've been doing?
Absolutely. So I'm working with two companies really closely right now, and one's called PlantCraft. You can find it at plantcraft.com. And it's a company making unbelievable plant-based deli meats that are completely allergen-free, no soy, gluten, nuts, dairy, et cetera, and made with really incredible ingredients like very prebiotic resistant starch green banana flour and upcycled grapeseed oil and flaxseed and some other really fantastic ingredients. It's a really clean label range of products from pâtés to salami, pepperoni, hot dogs, sausages, all kinds of things. So super excited to be helping to launch that and very privileged to work with them. And then I'm also working with a company that's making a range of dairy products like cream cheese, yogurts, puddings, milks, et cetera, from chickpea. And that's a company called CHKP or Chickpea Foods, chkpfoods.com. Super excited about them as well. I got involved with them just because, bottom line, I've not been satisfied with the yogurts on the market. And I'm a big yogurt guy, and I was just not happy with the options when I went plant-based. And it hasn't gotten much better over the last 20 years. But when I tasted this, I finally knew that we had something that could really make a name for itself and compete and help satisfy the most discerning of dairy eaters. So those are some companies I'm working with now I'm really excited about.
And I had Caddy from PlantCraft on the podcast. And full disclosure, I tried the pâtés. Oh my gosh. Like, this is the new food addiction for anybody who likes toast, crackers. I'm waiting for the day when I can get my hands on like a larger package of it so that I can like put it on toast and take it to like a church potluck and everyone will eat it. And I have no idea that it's green banana flour. It's just fantastic. And as a gut health enthusiast, I am all about the prebiotics. Let's come back to Moonshot for a minute. We talked about just a bit here the companies that you're involved with. Now, Moonshot is a little different because it is insights and not necessarily directly products, but it influences products. I want to ask you, what got you interested in starting that, and how do you see it as being able to improve both the messaging and the plant-based landscape in general?
I've spent the last 10 years in this space, and the first 9 years of that, I had a company called Plant-Based Solutions, where I consulted, along with my team, about 150 plant-based companies over those 9 years. Everybody from Gardein and Daya, Miyoko's Kitchen, Treeline Cheese, Health Warrior, you name it, tons of wonderful companies in the plant-based space. And in that time, one thing that was always difficult for me is I'm a strategy guy. And so I was working on product launches and positioning and branding and all these things. And because the companies tended to be really small and didn't have the resources, they couldn't afford to buy research, specifically two kinds. They couldn't afford to buy sales data from Nielsen and companies like that who can tell you sales data from the store level of all different products. And they couldn't buy consumer research about what people were actually wanting and buying and liking. And that's a real challenge if you're having to make guesses about how to message your product or brand it or what flavor to launch or anything. And my job was to help them make the best decisions to be most cost efficient, most effective, and have the greatest promise of success. And if I didn't have the resources to help validate that with consumers, it was really hard to make those decisions. So I always felt a little guilty doing so, mostly based on anecdotal evidence, just because neither they or I could afford more than that. And so I had always wished that somebody would come up with a solution that would provide that kind of research, those kinds of consumer insights at a very affordable rate, in a way that everybody could access it, and with a level of depth in the specific market that we were looking at that wasn't available. Usually, if you want to buy research, you know, let's just say you want to do a day of consumer of focus groups. And so I used to do this occasionally when companies could afford it. And if you want to do a day of four focus groups, about six people each in a professional focus group environment with the, you know, the double mirrors and a professional moderator who knows how to ask questions and all those things, you're good. If you do it in a place like New York, you're going to spend about $30,000 to interview 24 people in those focus groups. If you're going to buy custom data, survey or otherwise from the big research companies, you could spend tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars really easily. And so I just didn't think that was acceptable. And the idea for Moonshot Collaborative was to say, how can we help these companies get insights on the kinds of customers that they want to sell to know who exactly their audience is and what they're looking for, and test branding, messaging, products, et cetera, with those folks. So I founded the company with a gentleman named Che Green, who's a research expert and has spent the last 25 years doing consumer research. And my role is to help him get access to all the companies that I work with and many others, and to help bring his incredible skills to help their companies.
And I had no idea that it costs quite that much to do the consumer insights, because it's funny because now we have social media where you can ask your audience stuff and they tell you and give you user generated content, but it's harder to analyze. So how do you see that as being able to dovetail with what you're doing with companies in terms of things like PlantCraft and Chickpea in making the plant-based space and the food landscape in general better?
Not only is collecting, just to go back to something you said, not only is collecting data through one's own network or email list or anything else harder to analyze, it's also really biased. And it's a great thing to do in terms of getting some anecdotal evidence. But if you ask your mom what she's willing to pay for your product or what she thinks of the taste, she's going to say something very different than what a stranger will. And not just your mom, but even people that you're connected with on LinkedIn or social media, they're more likely to look like you, to have your kinds of social status, to have your kinds of dietary preferences, all these things. So it will be very limiting and won't give you a realistic picture. The way that I see this being helpful is that whether it's for my clients or for other companies in this space, they can run tests on all kinds of things. So let's say you're trying to decide a company name or product name, or you're trying to decide whether to put the word vegan or plant-based on your packaging, or whether to emphasize that it's gluten-free or keto, or you know, what is it that consumers are actually willing to go for, actually want, what is actually solving their pain point? And one way to do that is to determine what's already out there and figure out what people tend to like, and then compare it to what's out there and see where there's a white space opportunity. But the other thing is to ask people directly. And so we've had brands test logos, packaging designs, new product ideas in general. Would you buy a you know, pea protein based, blah, blah, blah. Or would you buy carrot sticks with lime powder or whatever? You know, we could test all kinds of things on there, and not just foods. We could also test cruelty-free beauty products, sustainability products. Our audience is thousands of consumers who at least every 90 days buy an alternative to an animal product. That's about 40% of the American population. And we did that intentionally because from a mission standpoint and from a financial standpoint, I'm not that interested in getting the vegan or the fully Whole Foods plant-based person to eat a different brand of Whole Foods plant-based or vegan products. I want to see how can I have the impact and the financial opportunity by going after the flexitarian or the meat reducer whose diet is still not great for their health and for the animals and for the planet, and who we could be helping to move in the right direction by giving them products that they'll like instead.
One thing stood out that you said to me about vegan or plant-based on packaging. I had Veronica from Grounded Foods on the podcast, and this came up as to how a lot of people, when vegan was like this big thing, they wound up pigeonholing themselves. And now that plant-based is a thing, it's harder to get out of. And I kind of want to piggyback on that. What do you see as the biggest challenges with those consumer insights and actually marketing to those people? Where do you see people making mistakes, and where do you think we need to change?
Yeah, so I think that certainly appealing exclusively to the already converted, already committed audience is very narrowing, right? About 1% of Americans identify as vegan, about 5% as vegetarian. But if you look at the population of people who say they're actively trying to reduce their meat consumption, it's about 40% of the US. And so that's really a massive opportunity. If you want to make a company that's going to make a lot of money, or if you want to make a company that's going to change a lot of hearts and minds and make a lot of impact, that's who you really need to be speaking to. So when it comes to the challenges that we face, I think one of them is pigeonholing ourselves. Another one, and it's not just with products, it's also with how we speak to people in general about the dietary or lifestyle choices that we make, has to do with being compassionate for the people we're speaking to, as well as for the cause we care about. And really thinking about the fact that in order to engage people, we need to meet them where they're at, and we need to make what we're offering attractive and desirable and comfortable and welcoming instead of scary and overwhelming and extreme. And that means helping people understand that simple swaps in their eating choices or trying something out, appealing to them with food, not with judgment, I think is really the answer. So however we can make people excited about what's delicious, what's convenient, and what's affordable is going to be more effective than telling them that the world is on fire.
I think that is definitely a big challenge I got to agree with you there, in the plant-based space, because this comes up on this podcast over and over and over, is we're in a bubble. And it seems like a really big bubble from the inside. I had a fantastic discussion with Chuck Carroll from the Physicians Committee podcast about this. It seems like a big bubble from the inside. But when you step out of it, you realize there's the rest of the world, and they haven't got a clue what we're talking about. And we're in here talking about climate change and factory farming and all that. And they're just like, so it's like a burger? I definitely agree with you there. So I wanted to go back to your background, actually, as being plant-based personally. What drove you to go plant-based over 20 years ago, and what was it like? I like to ask this question because I know a lot of people are in the flexitarian category, or they've just newly gone vegan and they have no concept of what it was like before the plant-based space was the way it is now.
Yeah. So I went fully vegan plant-based in 2002. I was vegetarian before that since 1998. And my motivation was really around animal protection. I tell people that I've always been somebody who really cares about a wide range of social justice issues. And that's everything from gender equality and, you know, nonviolence and, you know, you name it, there's a whole range of things, sustainability, obviously a whole bunch of stuff. But the issue that stuck out to me most was animal protection for two reasons. One was the fact that animals are not able to speak for themselves, or at least not able to speak our language. And the second fact was that the one place where I found I could have an impact myself in so many areas was with my own diet. You know, when I went vegan, it was 2002. We were entering the war in Iraq. George Bush was president, and he was the governor. He had been the governor with the most executions of all time. And so I joined the anti-death penalty club and the anti-war club. And I was like, I don't know how effective I'm going to be as one of millions of people trying to convince this president of all people to stop a war or to stop executing people. Like, I didn't know that I was going to have that much impact. But then somebody said to me, every single time you sit down to eat, every single time you go to the grocery store, you can make a choice with your dollar and with your fork that will save an animal's life, improve yours, and protect the environment. And for an 18-year-old kid, there is nothing more exciting than the empowerment that comes with being able to make an impact on one's own. And that's really what motivated me, and the fact that I could touch so many issues at one time. So that's really what did it for me. Fortunately, as I became more aware of the health benefits and of the sustainability impacts, I was even more hooked. And when it came to the health benefits, it really changed my life as well. I had very high cholesterol as a kid, and my cholesterol went down substantially. I lost quite a bit of weight, excess weight, and my skin cleared up, and my lungs cleared up. I was a kid who had whooping cough and croup as a kid, and I grew up with bronchitis throughout my whole childhood. And when I went vegan, by cutting out dairy, that was the big shift for me, actually. I didn't have bronchitis anymore, and it completely changed my life. So it was a perk, I think of it as, because it wasn't the reason I did it, but what a great perk to have my health be so much improved. And now to know that that's making me more available for my kid and everything else, you know, I love that impact it's had. And in terms of what it was like, because of my passion and conviction, it wasn't something that I would say was difficult. In fact, what I found so exciting about it was that it actually opened me up to a lot more foods that I'd never eaten before and made me a more adventurous eater, a more conscious eater who was really excited. I became a foodie because I suddenly was thinking about what I was eating and wanting to try new things and excited about new tastes and textures. My palate became more sophisticated. Because I think I was so hooked on the salt, sugar, fat, the processed foods that I've been having before. And suddenly by eating more natural foods, I could appreciate the nuance of things. Like suddenly when I'd have a bell pepper and, you know, the sweetness of a red bell pepper became much more apparent after I wasn't eating cake every day. So it really made my life so much better in terms of the pleasure I had around food. And in terms of what I could eat, yeah, if I wanted things that would replicate exact animal products, they weren't quite as good as today. You know, I remember that if I wanted to make a grilled cheese sandwich, I'd take a block of gelatinous like cheese stuff and put it in a pot and kind of warm it a little bit and then swoosh it between two pieces of bread and hope it kind of was gooey-ish. So it wasn't exactly like the grilled cheese we can have today, but it was worth it. And even more exciting now, and also more overwhelming with all the opportunities and all the options we have out there now.
Sounds like we have somewhat similar stories in the health department as far as going plant-based goes. It's funny, I don't really talk about my own plant-based trajectory on the podcast for whatever reason, but I had the same thing. I had, you know, I had this problem and that problem, and I had this potential diagnosis and that potential diagnosis and all sorts of stuff. And then suddenly, for me too, cutting out the dairy, I found out that I was so lactose intolerant. I knew I was, but then I found out it was so bad and I was clinging to stuff, like you said, because it was hard to find the, you know, now we have like better cream cheese and that was my last thing that I clung to. Once that went, I hear you. I'm resonating with everything you're talking about there. And you're talking about becoming a foodie and all of the different tastes and textures and things and the new, now we have new and exciting products. Seafood in the vegan space, vegan/plant-based space, is really trending now, and there's a lot more going on there. And in my opinion, that is one of the places where we're lacking really in things that are good analogs. I'm not somebody who's ever liked stuff that was super fishy, but once in a while, you're like, where's the shrimp? So talk to me a little bit about your involvement in plant-based seafood and what your thoughts are on that and other upcoming trends.
Sure. So I was actually involved with a company called Ocean Hugger Foods, which was a lot of fun. I was privileged to be able to co-found that company with certified master chef James Corwell. And it still exists. I've sold the company now. But Ocean Hugger Foods was very special to me. And one of the first companies that had the opportunity to create something that would replicate seafood, you know, one for one, to the extent where famous food critics were tasting it and saying they couldn't tell the difference, but also it did it in the cleanest way possible. Our products were among the most natural you could find. In fact, 96% of the net weight of our raw tuna was tomato. And it was only 5 ingredients, and they were all things you have in your kitchen. And so it was a lot of fun being able to make incredible, delicious foods using really whole ingredients. and had that company for 4 years. It's now going to be, we did actually launch it in food service in the US and Canada. And when COVID came, we did decide to pause operations because we were entirely food service based. And frankly, not only did the food service industry suffer, but we were selling largely like sushi and poke. And if there's one thing that people don't want to eat in a pandemic, they think was caused by eating animals, rightly so, it's raw fish. So our particular market, which was replacing raw tuna and eel and things like that, was particularly hard hit. So the good news is it's because the animal versions were hard hit that we were hard hit. Since then, what we've done is we've actually pivoted the company, and it's going to be relaunching with packaged food versions of what we launched with the same exact quality, but in ways that are more user-friendly for the consumer, because not that many consumers are making their own sushi rolls at home or chopping up their own tartare. So I loved being part of that company. It was really an early mover in plant-based seafood, and I think it is a huge opportunity. You know, our oceans are way overfished, and the crisis is much greater than we realize, because there's a lot we're not even measuring. For example, there's more carbon stored in the oceans than there is on land. And yet, every day, we're creating dead zones in the oceans by leaching chemicals from fish farms, by overfishing populations that are creating dead zones around coral because we're upsetting the food chain and it's causing coral to die, which releases a ton of carbon into the atmosphere. We're destroying food chains by overfishing specific parts of, specific types of fish that are creating increases in certain populations and decreases in others. And we're destroying the livelihoods of coastal fishermen. There's a million problems with how we're raising fish today and farming fish and catching fish today. And so I was really proud to be part of a company that was doing something about it. And I hope to see more, and I am seeing a lot more innovation in the plant-based seafood space. I still think there's a lot of opportunity for all you entrepreneurs out there. It's a great market to be in. There's a lot of products that haven't yet been replicated. And you know, one thing that happens as people move away from consuming as much beef and pork because of their fear of environmental and health impacts is actually that they increase their poultry and seafood consumption. And that's a real problem. Seafood is packed with mercury, PCBs, and other toxins and parasites. And poultry also comes from horrific conditions and can be responsible. I don't know if you saw, there's just been a huge expose that the UK has a massive salmonella outbreak of chicken. And so really, whether it's from an environmental, animal, or health standpoint, I really hope that people consider plant-based options instead of poultry or seafood. And seeing more options there is making it easier every day.
Thank you for bringing up the stuff about not only the way that the fishing in the oceans are, but the mercury thing. Now, a lot of people, because I was a health coach, they'll ask me things about, well, isn't fish healthy? Doesn't it have this, that, and the other thing? And I'm like, okay, we'll just divorce it from the plant-based versus animal-based discussion for a minute and just talk about, if there was no contamination, yes, you could get this, this, and this from fish, and it might actually be okay, maybe back in the day before we did all this stuff, but precisely for what you were saying, I would never recommend fish to people because it would basically be like saying, well, you could go in your bathroom and break open your thermometer and drink that, and you'd be just fine, right? Oof, that's really something I think more people need to hear about. So with all of these different things going on in the world, like you said, with the salmonella and the contamination in the oceans, the fishing problems, where do you think we need to be focusing next for our future of food and plant-based in particular?
Yeah, I'm really excited about combining the plant-based lens with other food justice issues. And I think that unfortunately, there has not been as much historical collaboration, cooperation, and intersectionality between plant-based and, I should say between vegan and sustainability, between animal community and environmental community, or local and, you know, all these things have not always come together. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think that those of us who are passionate about plant-based eating or veganism are that way because we believe there's an immense power in the intersectionality of what we're doing. And there is also power, when possible, in growing our own food or in using regenerative agriculture or in ensuring that, you know, the people who grow our food are treated with respect. So I'm really always looking at ways that we can support those intersectional issues. One thing that I'd really like to see more of is things like regeneratively grown crops that are going to be used in plant-based products. So for example, there are a lot of incredible foods, you know, in the Northeast corridor of the US, for example, there are amazing nuts like hazelnuts and chestnuts that are nearly extinct. And there are farmers now who are growing heritage species that would otherwise be going extinct in ways that are regenerative. So they're growing them alongside other plants that were going to replenish the soil with, you know, fixing the nitrogen in soil, helping to store carbon and improve the soil nutrition and therefore our food nutrition in a way that is good for everybody. And I'm really excited about what they're doing. And what I want to do is work with them to think about ways that they can commercialize those products so that they can make nut butters out of them, or so they can make non-dairy milks out of them or other things. And so I hope people think about how they can bring the food business lens and combine it with really amazing whole ingredients from the earth and help support farmers again by bringing those products to market. And if it means that we have to do some light processing to make it diverse enough presentation to the consumer, so it's not just a whole chestnut, we actually have it in other applications, great. Because I think that the overall benefit will be great. And I want to counter the argument or the fear that regenerative has to involve animal agriculture, or that, you know, we have to choose one thing over the other.
Yeah, I've never really understood that argument myself, because regenerative, I have friends with a regenerative ag farm, and they do have chickens, but I think they have like maybe 15 chickens. So we're not talking about like they have cows and chickens and this and everything. And there's also like the veganic movement too, that can be regenerative. And there's a lot of that. So it also sounds like doing this would be extremely good for our supply chain, because it would move everything locally. And not only with the regenerative ag being better for the nutrition, but also the less travel time, so less nutrient loss, and also less greenhouse gas emissions because of the fact that it's coming from, quote unquote, down the street rather than across the country. So do you see supply chain as also being a really big issue for the plant-based space?
Yeah, I also think it has major impacts for food safety. I'm not somebody who believes that something has to be local to be ethical. And I'm not somebody who believes that food miles always immediately translate to sustainable, because frankly, there are international jets that produce less pollution than some trucks going down the road if they're more efficient. So I'm not somebody who believes that. But writ large, overall, I think that reducing food miles is a good thing. And certainly, knowing where our food comes from, being more engaged in it is super important. And with any business, with any commercial product, the more distant we are from the source of that product, the more invisible the problems with its production are. And so if I don't know the farmer who's growing my food, I'm less likely to be paying attention to how much he's being paid or how much he's suffering. Same with where my clothes are made. You know, it's a lot easier to go to the Gap and buy something and not think about the 15-year-old kid who's working in horrible conditions to make it if I've never met him, or if I don't even know that he exists. And so I think that the closer we are to our products, including our food, the more we'll appreciate everything about it. You know, my son, I live across the street from an amazing community garden. And since he was 2 years old, my son and I have gone through and he's come to learn the smells and the appearance and the taste of all the different herbs and vegetables and fruits there. And he just fell in love with food, and he'll eat anything. His favorite foods are green vegetables because I raised him that way. And because he saw it being grown in the ground, and it was so exciting to him to see the first basil sprouting and to know that that's what was going into our pesto pasta or whatever it is. So I think that can be true for all of us. I love the taste of food more when I grew it or when I knew where it came from, when I experienced it firsthand. I care more about the farmers when I know them. You know, all these things are true. The more we can engage with our foods, whether it's understanding what animals they are or are not dependent on, and where they come from and how they've been raised or produced, the better.
I agree 100%. I am a farmer's market and community garden person. Thank you for engaging your son in food from an early age. More kids need that. I've talked to more than one person on this podcast who says, you know, education from a young age is absolutely essential. I would say not just for the fact that we have a plant-based movement, but so that we can have a healthy younger generation. I really love that, to see kids and get one of my favorite things is to walk around the farmer's market. when we can eat at the farmer's market again, is to walk around the farmer's market and see the little kids who are like two and they have this apple that's as big as their face and they're the happiest kid on the planet. I love that. So definitely kudos to you for that one. So there we go again. I lost my train of thought again. This is happening more and more frequently. I got so excited listening to you talk about the fresh food and the local food and this, that, and the other thing that I just kind of, I went off into like local food dreamland for a minute there.
Like, ooh, last time I got to can something.
Yeah, or like when you said like basil sprouts, I'm like, ooh, pesto pasta. And then when you're a foodie, there goes your brain. It's just like, we could stand here and talk about food for, as a matter of fact, let's talk about food for a second since we're on that subject. Talking about community gardening and being plant-based for 22 years, what are your top dishes that are your go-tos and what are maybe your favorite go-to products right now since you've been involved in both the whole food type space and the plant-based product space?
In terms of favorite dishes and favorite foods to eat, I'm super fortunate. I am not a great cook, but I'm super fortunate to live with an amazing cook. My wife loves to make all kinds of dishes, and so I really enjoy that. In terms of favorite cuisines, I am really big on Thai flavors, and I am also very excited about all kinds of Mediterranean foods. I'm a big, big, big fan of olives and of figs and of just about everything that comes from that region. My wife is Lebanese and my family's Moroccan and Spanish, so we really can love those kinds of flavors. And I love in Spanish cuisine, also in Moroccan cuisine, before you even start your main dish, there are 20 little bowls, like in Korean food also, there's 20 little bowls on the table with every kind of vegetable, preserved lemons, pickled this, fresh that, you know, herbs, carrots, whatever it is. In terms of my favorite products out there, oh boy, it's hard. And one of the hard things is that I'm so lucky that I get to try things before they're in market that my favorite things are always the next thing to come. In terms of companies that I work with, and I only work with things that I really, really love and believe in and love the taste of. I'm very, very excited for the products, obviously, from Plant Craft and Chickpea that I mentioned. I also made some investments in companies that I am very, very, very bullish on and very excited about. One is a company called Hooray Foods, which makes, I think, the only good plant-based bacon on the market right now. It's absolutely incredible stuff. The founder, Sri Artham, is just a really fantastic entrepreneur. And I'm very excited for what he's doing and think that it's one of those products that's never been replicated well and that people are in need of. So I'm excited for that one. I'm also invested in a company called Après, drinkapres.com, hurrayfoods.com is the other one, drinkapres.com. It's a pre-post workout / wellness functional drink that is, it does have protein in it, but it's not an overwhelming, insane amount of protein because not many of us are dying of kwashiorkor in this country. And so, you know, it's about 14 grams of protein from a really great mix of sources like cacao and chia and pea and hemp, and combined with some coconut water for some electrolytes and then some MCTs to really maintain that energy level and refreshment over time. I really love those products. And I think they're probably the only good tasting protein beverages I've ever had in my life, because most I think are really mealy and nasty. And a company that I'm also really excited about, I'm not somebody who eats the products very often because they're made for our canine friends, though I have tasted them because they are human grade, is a company called Bramble, which is doing direct to consumer fresh pet food. You know, an unbelievable amount of animals are used in our pet food, and it's always the worst parts of them. And if you look at the rates of cancer among dogs, they've been skyrocketing over decades because of the amount of processing that goes into kibble and the kinds of chemicals we're giving them. And so this entrepreneur, Amanda Rolat, has done an amazing job creating a really, really delicious, for the dogs, healthy, plant-based, fresh pet food that she ships people's homes. And I'm really excited about that one. Another product that is my guilty pleasure these days that is not what I have any affiliation with other than I just think it's amazing and I eat it more often than I probably should is Jules Organics brie cheese. I had the truffle brie the other day. I have the black garlic and original and truffle brie all on their way to my house, and I just think they're absolutely unbelievable. You mentioned Grounded, and if Grounded was available, I don't know where it is right now, but if Grounded was available to me, I'd be eating some cauliflower cheese and hemp cheese because those things are amazing. Obviously, I have a lot of cheese on my brain. I just love food. There's so many things that I enjoy eating. And on the whole food plant-based side, I'm really excited about all the ways that we're learning to play with textures in natural fruits and vegetables and bring them forward. So what Ocean Hugger did, what people are doing with jackfruit, all kinds of ways that we can really celebrate the delicious flavors and textures that are already present in nature.
And that'll tie right in with regenerative ag and localizing supply chains where it makes sense. I could talk about food for a hugely long time, and specifically cheese. And you said black garlic cheese, and there went my brain again. I was just like, off into la la land. So we're going to bring it back to earth here with the big question that I ask everyone. If you had unlimited power and resources, and you could bring about one change in the modern food system, what would you do?
Other than eliminating animal farming and fishing and fish farming, mushroom everything probably. I'm very bullish on mushrooms. I love mushrooms and I love what they do for our world. I think it would have to be that I'd want to put a stop to the concentrated animal industry we survive on right now, or not survive on for that matter. And that's not just true for land animals, but also I'm really, really concerned and frustrated with what's happening in the oceans. We talked about that a little bit, but I'll mention for one second, if I can, you know, historically wild fishing was the plan, and it led to major overfishing and depletion of wild harvests. And so the proposed solution was to switch to fish farming, and now a massive percentage of fish are caught in are raised on farms instead of caught in the wild. The problem with that has been not only that they're leaching all kinds of antibiotics and chemicals, pesticides and herbicides into the water and creating dead zones around those farms, it's also that they are feeding them a lot of wild caught fish in order to grow them. And so it's actually one of the least efficient processes. Just like it takes 10 pounds of grain to make 1 pound of beef, it takes about 5 pounds of wild caught fish to grow 1 pound of farmed fish. And the solution that I'm seeing now is really, really problematic. It's that in order to respond to this calorie conversion inefficiency and people's concerns that it's doing horrors for the oceans, even worse than before, people are switching to feeding the fish soy and corn. Monocrop GMO soy and corn, which has worked so well for farm animals. And they're taking a page out of the same playbook, and it's just going to accelerate the problems we have with deforestation of the Amazon and all kinds of things. And so I'm really, really not excited about how, when we try to focus our food system on maximum yield without caring a lot about the externalities and the effects it has on the planet, human health, and the animals, we end up creating problems and then trying to solve them with further problems. And I think we need to go back to the basics. And so that's another area that I'm really concerned about. So anything we can do to move away from this system that's dependent on raising animals and feeding them a ton of food that we could be eating for optimum nutrition ourselves, like the algae that fish eat or anything else, I think is a step in the right direction. And if everybody just did so, 1 day a week, 2 days a week, whatever it is, it would already make such a huge impact.
Yeah, 100%. I don't think I can add anything to that other than I get a lot of really good answers to this question. And I appreciate the extra insights on the whole ocean thing again, because we don't get a lot of that on the podcast. Not a lot of people who are involved in the plant-based seafood or the seafood space. So that's things that people really need to know about that aren't really out there, I don't think, outside of like the plant-based space, and particularly with people who are focused on ocean health. It's a really big issue because the oceans are the planet, right? I mean, no ocean, no planet. And it shows again what you were saying, the importance of being connected to where our food comes from. Because like what you just described with solving problems with problems, it goes back to that disconnect, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's just like when we have a food system that creates heart disease and then decide to treat it with statins instead of saying what food led to that in the first place, right? I mean, all these systems are so connected, and preventative medicine, eating from the source, not cramming animals so tight that we have to give them antibiotics to keep them from getting sick. All these quote unquote solutions are just deepening the problems.
So if we get further back to the roots of food, we can see Yeah, and you know, just going to go back there, you said this is what you would do if you had unlimited power and resources. Well, you've got some power and resources at your fingertips right now, and it sounds like that's one of the things you're using them to do. So you're on the way to that dream. And speaking of that, where can people find all of these different things you're involved in? Where can they connect with you and learn more?
Yeah, so please check out my company at missionplant.com, missionplant singular.com. And on there, you can find the list of the companies that I'm invested in, and please support them. You can also find the companies that I consult, and you can find also a link to moonshotcollaborative.com. If you're an existing entrepreneur with the company, or even if you're just thinking about launching something and want to decide if it's worthwhile or want to find out how to do so most effectively, it's extremely affordable, and it's, I think, a very good service. You can find out all about it at moonshotcollaborative.com and missionplant.com. And please add me on LinkedIn. I don't spend much time on the consumer social medias like Facebook and LinkedIn. Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and that kind of thing. But I am obsessed with LinkedIn. It just went down for an hour and I was freaking out. Anybody can find me on there, and that's where there's a lot of us looking to change the food system and change the world. And it's a very welcoming environment. I hope that more people will get involved in this space, whether it's as entrepreneurs, whether it's as investors, whether it's as, you know, service providers, anybody who can help us to get involved in changing our food system. You'll find that there's a lot of people welcoming you with open arms, and that we need you.
And all of that will be in the show notes so people can check it out directly. And I agree. Step inside our amazing plant-based bubble on LinkedIn. It really, I've spent the last year exploring it, and I have become a bit obsessed myself. It's a great place to be, and it's a great place to have these kinds of discussions and make these kinds of connections. So thank you, David, again, for being on the podcast, for sharing your insights, and for all the work you're doing, especially from the marketer side of me. Thank you for the whole thing with the moonshot. I think that it's long overdue in terms of the need for better messaging, particularly in the plant-based space. So thanks again.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to David for bringing his insights and expertise to the Modern Health Nerd podcast. I feel like we could have gone on for a lot longer than we did. David is very into the plant-based space, and he's pretty active also on Clubhouse. So if you're on Clubhouse and you want to hear more of David's insights, he's there quite a bit. I've done a couple rooms with him in the past, and we really have good conversations about marketing and branding and plant-based products and everything that's going on in the plant-based space. It's a really exciting time for the industry right now, and it's great to know that there are people like David who are helping companies delve into the information and the data that they need to produce the products that are going to bridge the gap between the flexitarian audience and the plant-based space. I'm excited to see what continues to unfold as plant-based businesses bring more innovations to market. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening to the Modern Health Nerd podcast. Come back next week for another fascinating conversation about what's going on in the plant-based space. Until then, stay nerdy.